does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has
it all. This morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy. It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
In the Game 5 win, all five starters had at least six rebounds. And the Pacers are rebounding well and shooting extraordinarily well as Halliburton hits another three, his fourth of the quarter. It's a 39-point quarter and a 15-point lead. McBride drives back to the top, and it's intercepted by Nesmith, who spins away from the predatory Brunson, who tried to get it back. Halliburton in on the left side, out to Turner. The rainbow is worth three. Driving and pulling up from the right wing and scoring is Nesmith. He's got six of his 11 here in the third. The lead is back to 12. Now McConnell steals the inbound, count it, and put Nesmith on the line with a chance for a three-point play. Do they not, New York Knicks, have cable TV where you live? Do you not watch the NBA? This is what TJ McConnell does.
And the Pacers will set a record for the best shooting performance in NBA playoff history. And the Indiana Pacers back in the conference finals, first time in a decade. They'll face the Celtics starting on Tuesday.
Ding dong, the witch is dead!
You win Game 7 in Madison Square Garden, you've made history. It's one of the hardest things to do, and you guys did it with complete 100% class.
We went into the most hostile environment in the NBA, and we won the We took that. We didn't give them a second to breathe. You guys did it for 48 minutes.
We expected to be here. This ain't a surprise for us. It's no fluke. We expect this from our group.
In the city of Indianapolis, there's nothing like the Racers and the Pacers when it's all going.
Clap number four in the books. It is 233.816. The four-lap average, 234.220. Scott McLaughlin grabs the pole for the 108th Indianapolis 500.
I think Mike Greenberg should give us 10 to noon today. I think we deserve that slot, and that would be 5 hours of local and, of course, extend into Jake and Jimmy noon to 3, into JMV from 3 to 6. What a day yesterday. What a weekend here in the Circle City. I can't believe I typed the words on Twitter yesterday, and I can't believe I'm going to say it out loud. Eastern Conference Finals. Your Indiana Pacers.
It's unbelievable, and a good morning to you. I hope Vegas went well for the Bowen family. A little 5-year anniversary. I tell you, man, what a game last night. And really, for me, I had the Indy weekend. I mean, I was at the track this weekend. I was enjoying qualifying. You heard some of that sound in the open. But today, it's all going to be about the Pacers over the Knicks. Obviously, I picked the Knicks to win this series, but this team, you know, we have talked about them having an opportunity. You got to take advantage of the opportunity, the injuries to other teams, and you being able to play those teams. And we were worried, both of us, that they were not going to take hold of this opportunity against the Knicks, but they did. They deserved it. And for Tyrese Halliburton specifically, a guy that I've questioned, we've questioned not his effort, but his aggressiveness during the postseason at times. And I kept saying, I'm just surprised he's not having one of those games where he's chirping at everyone in MSG. And boy, KB, at about 3:45 yesterday, that's what we got.
That's what a star does, delivers on the road in a Game 7. That was a star-like performance on every level from Tyrese Halliburton and Andy just in general. I mean, find me a Pacer player that played poorly yesterday. I mean, if you wanted to be super nitpicky, you can go with Obi Toppin, but still, you know, 90% of the guys that got in a Game 7 on the road,
they were locked in, man,
were outstanding in that environment. And, you know, it's one of those days where the Knicks fans have got to get on their feet when they're down 18 to try and cut it to 16. And it was just a thorough beatdown from the start. And Halliburton set the tone. You know, to your point, to me, the other thing that stands out, and I think this will be a popular topic that we obviously hear a lot today, probably more nationally once Stephen A. Smith is done, you know, being a cheerleader for the Knicks, is, you know, how much the Pacers were gifted injury-wise. And certainly that is a storyline that is fine to bring up, but it can't be the only storyline. And I think that's what kind of frustrated me a little bit yesterday, is certainly the Pacers got injury luck on their side. But I also thought what they did a great job of, and Rick Carlisle, by the way, is going to join us at 8, and a credit to him and the coaching staff, is they took a team, and to put it in football terms, they took a team with the backup left tackle or the rookie quarterback in the game, and they said, don't make it easy on them. Let's pick them up full court. We're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. Screw it. We're going to pick them up full court. We're going to rely on our depth. We're going to move the ball offensively on a routine basis to test them for 48 minutes, to get into their depth, which has liabilities, and your depth does not. And so that, to me, also needs to be shared when you're talking about, certainly the Pacers got fortunate injury situations. No one is denying that. But they also made sure that they exposed that even further with the Knicks. Can you get this series deeper? Can you get it to a game 7? Can you force OG Anunoby to look like me out on the floor yesterday afternoon? Those sorts of things the Pacers did and exposed that. And I think that should be part of the story as well.
Listen, I mean, at some point that will be the storyline. You know, I think for Pacer fans, who the hell cares? I mean, I know I might be coming at it from the wrong way, and I know fans do care, so I don't want to act like what you're saying is wrong. You're spot on. I mean, yesterday was all about the Knicks before the game, and then after the game, it was a lot about the Knicks as well. Their season, the injuries, you know, the historical nature of Jalen Brunson before the Knicks exited the postseason. But the Knicks did what the Knicks do in the postseason, and that is they lose. Whether they have a bunch of injuries or not, whether they have reasons or not, whether they have excuses or not, KB, the Knicks do what they do, and that is they don't lose. They don't advance to the NBA Finals. That is what you've seen for over 20 years with the Knicks, and they're going to continue down that road. I want to go to something quickly. You mentioned this, though. You know, there is something about taking advantage, like I said, of an opportunity. And I thought the Pacers did that. And I listen, I'm fine with the story partially being, who they have had to face, who they have not had to face. But what we have asked of this young team is to grow up and to take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of them. And they've done that through the first couple rounds. And I'll even say, you know, when did Brunson get hurt? At about the 3-4 minute mark of the third
game was
quarter.
Over.
That's my point.
It was a 20-point
game. They also put themselves in the situation in game 7 to where it didn't matter what was going on elsewhere. They were playing that well. And so often in this series, it's funny, there have been the two games on the weekend, and we always forget about the first game that happens on Friday. But the maturity that the team played with in game 6, I didn't expect them to discard of the Knicks the way that they did on Friday. We need not forget the maturity in game 6 led to them also being mature and then capturing the opportunity in game 7. And we need not forget, they had to take care of business twice in this series, backed up against the wall elimination-wise, and they did.
Well, when we have 4 blowouts to end the series, we also probably, for the second straight Monday, should go back to game 3.
Yeah, you're not
wrong. Because without the Turner block, without the Nembhard 3 from Fountain Square, you don't get, you know, this game 7, and you don't get the Pacers advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. Every other day, starting tomorrow night in Boston, that will be game 1. Again, Rick Carlisle going to join us today at 8 o'clock, so we will get to him here in less than an hour. What does yesterday do for Tyrese Halliburton moving forward? I know that's probably a little bit of a bigger picture storyline, but I think that's a real conversation to have.
He needed, you know, that. He needed that game.
He had been such a no-show for the majority of the Madison Square Garden minutes throughout this playoff series. Does that all of a sudden lead to kind of this next eye-opening experience for him of like star, you know, all caps, bold font, et cetera, of like, hey, you just need to feel that moment. obviously succeed beyond belief on the road in a game seven, because those moments, they don't happen a ton over your course of your career. Obviously, you hope they happen a lot, but they get all the scrutiny. And that's how we talk about sports quite often, is particularly, you know, the NBA of, okay, you know, what happens in playoff series? What happens in game sevens? What happens in game sevens on the road? And for Halliburton to look like that, after such an up and down nature, again, certainly down away from home to this series, I think that is kind of another angle to this, that it's a little bit more bigger picture, Andy, but still, if all of a sudden he heads into next year and that's the thought process he has of like, no, I am a star. I can do this. I did it on a road in the world's most famous arena in a game seven. That is another aspect of it that I think can be just huge for this team, certainly in the present in this Eastern Conference Finals, but definitely moving forward.
Now, I need to tell you, this weekend, I was living the All-Star Indy weekend myself, KB.
Okay.
You'd have been proud of me. Spent a lot of time at the track.
Nice.
You
were a track rat?
I was a track rat. I did want to send Jake Query a message last night that I was coming for him, you know, as it pertains to Indy 500 knowledge. I'm kidding, of course. Found myself with the track and then just living through these
games. Picturing Jake having a leash on you after how we talked about you a couple of days ago.
Oh, goodness. Well, I do, being out there two or three times over the last several days, I do feel like I have a good game plan for Friday and then Sunday.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So we'll get to that. That's not the most important thing today. The Pacers winning game seven, but McLaughlin winning the poll. I took the wife out there. She got a picture with Kyle Larson.
Nice.
You like that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Kyle Larson third last night in the NASCAR race off the helicopter and everything.
Did you see the NASCAR fight, too?
I did see
one
that.
One of the Butch brothers and Ricky Stenhouse got into a punchy match, which is always good stuff. But
yesterday was one of the days where, again, I picture in picture. Is that still a thing?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm like, we
were texting, like, the things that were going on at the same time yesterday.
I get off the flight from Vegas, and I'm like, this is better than anything you could do in Vegas now, trying to consume all these sports.
I had two TVs and my
Vegas
phone
high.
Going. It was game seven on one TV, the qualifications on the other one.
And then Bluey on the other one?
And then the PGA Championship on my phone.
I was multitasking to say that. Luckily, Max was all about the race cars as well. Yes, Scott McLaughlin on the pole. It is a Penske sweep of that front row. And per usual, the bump day drama was tremendous
awesome.
There. Unfortunately, the 19-year-old Nolan Siegel is the odd man out here. Graham Rahal sweats it out for a second straight year. Marcus Ericsson, I mean, to think that he'd be, you know, fighting for a spot, certainly not something you would have expected this time last week. So just crazy, crazy drama out there. Again, they'll practice from 1 to 3 today. It's always a very entertaining final practice day before Carb Day. And then it'll be quiet over there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And we'll start to look at the weather as we creep a little bit deeper into the week. It does sound like temps will be in the 80s, and unfortunately, the early outlook...
No, don't do it.
There's just still
too early. It's Monday.
There are some things to monitor.
Okay, so what day are we talking? Sunday? Are we talking Friday for Carson?
We're talking like Wednesday through Sunday.
Looks like a little bit of both.
Okay.
So we will certainly hit on that as the week moves along. Lynn Dunn going to join us at 9 o'clock as well. Obviously, it's not been a good start to the season for the Indiana Fever. Caitlin Clark, from a scoring standpoint, much better, much more efficient shooting the basketball on Saturday. But that turnover number still alarmingly high for her. 7 o'clock tonight, I believe that's ESPN, as the Fever play their fourth game of the season.
Wasn't this initially a game that was supposed to be at noon?
Was this one of them?
I think it was, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's supposed to be at 12 o'clock today. I think that was the initial schedule that we talked about. But, yeah, we'll dive into the Indy 500 stuff.
We will not get Pacers and Racers on Sunday. I know a lot of people are curious about that.
It's the first thing I thought about.
The schedule announced, again, every other day starting Tuesday. So the home games for this upcoming series, we know we'll have one Saturday night. We know we'll have one Monday night as well. Basically, every tip time's at 8. I want to say the Saturday one is at 8:30.
I think it's
an ABC game.
I think it is, yeah.
So again, home game coming up Saturday, 8:30. Then you'll get Monday at 8 o'clock. And then if there is a game 6, that would be a week from Friday. So again, every other day, and as expected, the Pacers a heavy, heavy underdog, 9.5 points.
Now,
for tomorrow night.
Just quickly here, we'll get to a morning check down. You know, you mentioned this, and I think it's worth talking about. you know, we mentioned so much, and we knew that the Knicks, you know, coming into this series, obviously the Julius Randle stuff happens, and then during the series, you know, Mitchell Robinson, really ever since Joel Embiid helped injure him back in the Philly series, wasn't the same. And then it was, yeah, you know, listen, it was unfortunate. It was really unfortunate for the Knicks. OG Anunoby, who's such a multiple player, you know, the numbers when he plays, they're winning 9 out of 10 times, it seems, but this was the reason, KB, that we said early on in games or early on in the series that, hey, the Pacers need to win games so they can get to the back end, game six, or if there is a game seven. And by then, the health and the minutes played and being able to play nine guys, the depth of the Pacers was going to, you know, quote, rear its ugly head. And isn't that exactly what happened? Is that the Pacers outlasted the Knicks. And you saw it in game six, and you saw it obviously yesterday.
And I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at with the whole injury storyline. You know, everyone was like, you're jinxing the Pacers. When I said once OG Anunoby wasn't coming back, I was like, the Pacers are going to win the series. I mean, that to me was rather obvious. And frankly, OG's 5 minutes on the floor yesterday couldn't have been any better for the Pacers with how bad he looked. And my thought there was eventually you would just wear them out, frankly, with your depth. And I don't want to just say depth and numbers, like quality depth. I mean, that needs to be spoken about. And I think we've done that, of course, here in this market, but I don't think it's talked about enough nationally of when the Pacers put guys like McConnell and Toppin and, hell, certainly Shepard in the series.
Well, they put Isaiah Jackson in yesterday.
And Isaiah Jackson gave you really quality minutes at different parts of this series. That's different than the Knicks going to Jericho Sims. And sure, Alec Burks gave them a little bit, but still, like, their depth had such a severe drop-off. And, you know, too many times when you have these advantages of, again, you use the football analogy, you got the backup left tackle. Well, what do you do? I think you should probably blitz over that left tackle side. Oh, you have the rookie quarterback? Don't let him sit back there and just play this prevent, you know, zone defense and say, no, we'll wait for him to make a mistake.
Right.
No, you dictate to that. And I thought the Pacers dictated with the full court, with the great ball movement, with the reliance on their depth and saying, all right, New York, you might be able to withstand a punch or two early in a game, but can you do it throughout? Can you do it throughout 48 minutes? Can you do it throughout a 7-game series? And that's what they did. And obviously, just that offensive performance yesterday. I mean, on the road,
it doesn't
in
get
a
better.
Game seven.
Yeah, shooting 70%, basically.
You set a playoff record for the best field goal percentage in the history of the postseason in a single game.
You smothered them to where they didn't have a chance.
Like, you, I mean, I don't know how many people stayed up, but you know, I watched Minnesota-Denver last night.
Mm-hmm.
That's how game sevens are supposed to look.
Right.
They're supposed to look ugly. And two teams under 100 points. And Anthony Edwards, on the biggest stage of his career, he goes 6 of 24. You know, I mean, that's not what Halliburton did yesterday. And again, all credit to Minnesota and certainly Karl Anthony Towns and the Fighting Michael Grady's, the Fighting Mike Conley's. They advanced to the Western Conference Finals. But that's how Game 7s I'm used to. Not a 39-point first quarter yesterday where the road team just absolutely punks the home team. That, to me, just an unbelievable effort by the Pacers. And, you know, I don't know how much Rick Carlisle will take this when he joins us at 8 o'clock, but something needs to be said for just a franchise that has not won a playoff series coming into this season for 6 years, or excuse me, for 10 years, hasn't won a playoff game in 6 years, to be one of the last four teams standing is a pretty impressive accomplishment. And given whatever injury situation you were dealt or not, fans, rightfully so, should be celebrating that because we haven't had a lot of that. Unless you're a Purdue fan, you haven't felt a lot of that here from a local team standpoint as of late. Job well done. And for that effort in Game 7, that will live in certainly Pacers playoff lore.
It's a fun Final Four in the NBA. I mean, you have Boston who is trying to get theirs, and a guy like Tatum is trying to get over the hump. You have what's going on here in Indianapolis.
Parity is alive in the NBA.
Yeah, you have what's going on here in Indy, which is a revitalization of this franchise, which is a team standing up, which is a superstar, you know, who has emerged this season on the, you know, being one of the faces of the NBA. And then, you know, on the Western Conference side, there's stars there. And boy, you sure didn't think Minnesota was actually going to do it, and that the Dallas Mavericks, who had been crushed the last couple years for not keeping Jalen Brunson, they find themselves in the Western Conference
Finals. So get a new champ for a sixth straight year in the NBA. Yep. For, you know, you and I, or Mark, I mean, if you grew up in the late 80s and 90s, that certainly wasn't something you were, hell, early 2000s, you weren't used to that as well. So yes, a little bit of parity alive here in the NBA.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Pacers, Racers, will get sound from both the track and MSG last night. Your morning check down to Celebration Monday here on the Wake Up Call.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Afternoons like yesterday, absolutely why we love sports. And joining us right now from Boston on this Monday morning, as the preparations will and have begun for game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, the head coach of your Indiana Pacers joining us here, Rick Carlisle on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Describe that scene yesterday. Your social media department did a wonderful job of posting some of it on the website in the hallways, and you heard a little bit of it there from Lloyd Pierce and company in the locker room. What was that feeling like when the final horn sounded?
Well, it was an amazing day, and as you could see in the game, you know, our guys just played a completely fearless game of NBA basketball, you know, from start to finish. I mean, the environment, it's just hard to describe the environment. It was just absolutely wild in there. And, you know, New York has great fans. We know that. The Garden was as raucous as I've ever seen it. And their fans were trying to will them to a victory, to will them back into the game when, you know, when we build up some separation. And, you know, our guys just were defiant in how they continued to battle through. And when it got to 6 points in the third quarter, the guys came together in a timeout and gave each other energy and decided how they were going to bounce back, and they did. And so, yeah, it was, as these games always seem to be, it was a long game. I mean, you know, you got national TV timeouts. You've got the crowd that I mentioned. You've got a team that, you know, seemingly just always keeps coming at you with the Knicks. And we, you know, our guys had answers. And so it was a great feeling. And so now, you know, we have a little bit of a time to exhale here, but not much.
Coach, congratulations. These weekly meetings have been fantastic, and watching the maturation of your team. I want to get to some of those maturing moments from your team, but you mentioned there the lead gets down to six. It's a crazy atmosphere. I mean, we saw when it was an 18-20 point game, the Knicks crowd on their feet trying to will their team back, but it does get a little bit close. What did you say, or did team leaders stand up and say, guys, let's put it back on them here. We're not going to lose this game. Can you describe that huddle for us?
Well, you know, the timeouts are 3 minutes and 25 seconds or something. They're really, really long in the playoffs and national TV games. And so, you know, one of the things that we've done is, you know, we give the players more time. Because if you just jump in there with a 35 or 40 second message, you're still going to have 2 minutes left, two plus minutes left to just sit there, and then guys will be getting out of their seats and not using the rest time. And so I know that James Johnson was a big part of it. I know Tyrese was a big part of it. Miles, Pascal were a big part of it. And we had talked about all this stuff yesterday morning, you know, that there were going to be difficult times. And in game five of that series, we did not handle those difficult times well. We did not stick together. We had some fragmentation, and we learned from those things after game six, and after game five. And so we came home, we did what we had to do in game six. And then, you know, when I went into the huddle, the thing that I said is, listen, they're ramping up their pressure, but if we get stops and scoop loose balls and or get rebounds, you know, they cannot guard you guys, and they cannot apply this kind of pressure. And so, you know, we got back to that kind of a mindset. We got a couple of really good stops. I believe McConnell went in the game, and he was a big difference maker, obviously, in yesterday's game. And, you know, we found a way to get the wheels back on the wagon, and which was a beautiful thing, because, you know, their crowd had gotten going. Their players had started to believe a little bit. And, you know, these are the moments where you've got to step up.
Coach, you used the phrase competitive class several times yesterday in your post-game press. I was curious, could you kind of expand on what you mean by that and what your team showed you that kind of led to you saying that quite often yesterday?
I just really feel that this is a class group of individuals that they have learned to compete the right way. You know, there's a way to be defiant and a way to be unbending, you know, without crossing the line of class, you know, of being a class competitor. And so, and I also believe that you've got to have the right, you got to get your heart in the right place. You've got to do so many things right to win a game seven on the road, particularly in Madison Square Garden, where I have, you know, a very good feel for how difficult it is.
Rick Carlisle with us here again. Game one of the Eastern Conference Finals coming up tomorrow night from Boston. Coach, how much do you think your depth has been a real, real asset in, you know, staving off the Bucks and now doing it in seven games with the Knicks?
Well, it's been, you know, if it's not the difference maker, it's a major difference maker. You know, we've had to transform our approach, you know, from really an all-out offensive team in November and early December to, you know, the changeover at Christmas time, the lineup changes, the extra amount of time dedicated to defense, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you played two straight series, long series, a six-game and a seven-game series, picking up full court the entire time and, you know, just making the other team just work. You are doing it with a level of grit and guts that is very high. And so I have extreme pride in you know, our guys buy into this, you know, around Christmas time. It was clear to me that, you know, the offensive pace that we had gotten on in November, December, you know, in-season tournament, you know, we came off the in-season tournament, had some struggles, you know, just the whole idea that you could just maintain that kind of offense and not establish a consistent defense was unsustainable. And it was clear. And so we had to make some difficult decisions. And the work that went in was real.
Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle with us here on the Wake Up Call on the Fan on this Monday. Again, Pacers and Celtics game one tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on ESPN. Catch it all right here, 7:30 on the Fan. Coach, it's a great segue. You talking around Christmas time, some lineup changes, changing, you know, practice habits, more defense. I wanted to ask you about that because you talked about it after the game last night as well. Was it one big meeting? A several meetings. When you meet with your coaching staff and you guys realize you need to make a change to how you're playing, you then bring that to the players. What was that meeting like? And like you mentioned, the buy-in, and Turner even talked about it post-game, coach, the buy-in was there. Was it there immediately? And is that how satisfying has that been that you guys were able to change a little bit midstream and become a better defensive team? And that's one reason you're in the Eastern Conference Finals tomorrow night.
Well, the moment that everything became really crystal clear to me was after the Clipper game at home. We got beat very badly. It was a situation where we had one day in between, I think. That game and our next game at home was going to be against Charlotte. And so, you know, we did something that, you know, is not easy to do, you know, when you get into the thick of the season, and that was to have a real live practice on the day in between. And there wasn't a film session. It was just a statement of, look, this is where we are. You guys know where we are. This was an embarrassment last night. And this is how we're going to do business from now on. This is not going to happen overnight. This is going to be a lot of work, but this is something that's necessary. And with our long-term vision of a team that can get deep into the playoffs and eventually win a championship, there's no substitute for consistency on the defensive end. So, you know, we moved practice back later that particular day to give guys some recovery time after the Clipper game. We had a live practice. It wasn't super long, but we started to really nail down on shell defensive principles with higher levels of detail. And there just became a higher level of accountability. And if you weren't defending and doing your job within the system, you know, you were going to sit. And so, you know, it's, you know, these things are hard, you know, and the guys responded well. It certainly did not happen overnight. I don't even know what the date was of the Clipper game. It was, you know, probably somewhere in mid-December.
It was Monday, December 18th, Coach. You had just come off losing four straight games, 5 out of 6.
Yeah, so there you go. And then we, I think, went back and forth with a win and a loss or something like that. And then
you know, won Christmas six straight. You won six straight, 9 out of 10 after that.
Yeah, well, but the, you know, Christmas night in Houston was not easy. There were some difficult meetings with players and you know, basically a statement in some of those individual meetings that, you know, we were going to change. This was not an option. This has been decided, and, you know, we needed to get bigger and more physical. We needed to rebound better. And we needed to have a real attitude change. And so, you know, that wasn't the starting point on December 26th, but it was a time when things became very real.
Coach, I want to go back to yesterday, and you know, you guys winning the game, I don't think should have shocked anybody, but I'll admit I'm a bit in awe of how well you guys play, just because game seven's on the road, you don't see that. And I guess, Frank, I mean, I know you saw another team win on the road in game seven last night, but I mean, that game was a little clunky and a little bit of a kind of a survival feel, whereas yesterday, I mean, you guys were incredible offensively. You set the tone defensively early in the game, and you put up historic numbers throughout. Was there anything you felt going into the game that all of a sudden you thought, hey, I think we're going to play? I mean, you can make the argument yesterday was, you know, one of, if not the best game you guys have played all season long, and again, it's on the road in a game seven.
Well, I just have a great belief in our guys. You know, we had a meeting yesterday morning and laid out exactly what we were going to do. We talked about the contingencies of what could happen with Ananobi, who had gone into the as questionable. I had no doubt that Hart was going to play the entire game and that he was going to play well. I mean, he's shown that level of grit the entire, you know, series. And you know, what he's done in Madison Square Garden, he's like a 20.13 rebound guy in Madison Square Garden. And he pointed this out, and that, you know, look, here's what we got to do. And, you know, game sevens in New York are legendary occurrences. And it's an honor to play. Stay true to who we are. Okay. Come out and be fearless. And just make sure that whatever happens, that we understand the importance of possession of the ball and that we are always attacking and always staying together. And, you know, Tyrese led us. I mean, I thought his first quarter was a fearless first quarter. And you know, there were shades of Reggie running around, mm-hmm. you know, throwing in bombs. And he played with attitude. And you've got to have a bold attitude to win in that environment. And he gave us a lot of confidence.
Rick Carlisle with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Again, game one, Pacers and Celtics coming your way tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on ESPN. Hear it right here on The Fan beginning at 7:30. Well, Coach, we always appreciate it. So gracious with your time after such a big win. We've done this now back-to-back series, and let's do another one. Boston's up next. We know how good Boston is. We know the pace that they will play with. They don't mind running with you. Tatum, Brown, White's been fantastic in the postseason. What have you seen early on from them facing them this season? What kind of issues could they give your team, do you think?
Well, it's clearly going to get more real now. I mean, they're a rested team. It sounds like Porzingis may miss a game or two in the series, but he certainly will be back in the series. We don't know for sure. Who knows? Me might even play right off the bat. So, look, they're the team that's really set the pace the entire season. I think they have the best record in the league. They've ran away with the East. They've barely broken a sweat in their two series with Miami and Cleveland. And so, you know, we certainly have our hands full and have a great level of respect for what they've done this year and also the Garden crowd. You know, I mean, this is another Garden, but I mean, this is a Garden that I grew up in. As a player, I'm all too familiar with that environment and how great their fans are. And so we're going to have to recover quickly, and we're going to have to jump into the deep end right off the bat tomorrow night.
Rick, we'll end with this, and I guess it's kind of how I started, and simply it's me probably relaying a message that 99% of fans are feeling here on this Monday morning of just a thank you and a congrats. You know, 10 years without a playoff series win, 6 years without a playoff win, and you guys have thoroughly put both of those things to rest. And I know certainly you got bigger goals here starting tomorrow night, but a thank you for giving us Pacers and Racers this weekend, and a congrats on that. And can't wait to watch it all continue here coming up tomorrow night.
Well, our guys have done some amazing things this year. We don't take it for granted, the position that we're in. We've caught some breaks along the way, but you've got to have a certain level of defiance to get to this point in the NBA playoffs and get yourselves into the conference finals. So, you know, we look forward to this challenge. This will be tough. This will be by far the toughest thing we faced yet. I don't think there's any question about that. But we're looking forward to it. And you know, I'll talk to you guys, I don't know, next Tuesday, I suppose.
Can't wait, Coach. Thank you so much.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
All right, take care.
What a week it is going to be here in the Circle City. On top of Pacers and Racers, we're also going to throw in a whole lot of Indiana Fever as well. Starting tonight, 7 o'clock, Connecticut Sun on ESPN, and then they head out west. They're going to play out west coming up here in Seattle, in L.A., and in Vegas on Saturday night for their first Western road trip of the year. To talk more about that, the great, the one and only Lynn Dunn joins us here, Fever GM. Coach, you got to start with your emotions yesterday watching the Pacers close it out there in Game 7.
Hey, guys, I am so excited to be here with you this morning because I've got some shout-outs. First, I want to shout-out to Kevin Pritchard and Chad Buchanan and Ted Wu and Kelly Kroskoff and the unbelievable team they put together. Big shout-out to Rick Carlisle, who, you know, steered this team through a very hostile, tough series, came out with the victory in the Garden. And then, of course, I've got to say a shout out to TJ McConnell and my buddy from Belmont College, Shepherd. Those two really just did a job off the bench. And so I'm just thrilled with what the Pacers have done.
I love the shout outs. If you could take a quality from what you've seen in this Pacers team and see your Fever start to play like that, what would it be?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I want to play with the intensity and the hustle and the, I don't know what the words, in ferocity of a TJ McConnell. I wish everybody could catch his aggressiveness and his intensity. He's just amazing. And another shout out to just the bench, the Pacer bench, what they did when they came in, you know, maintain that high level of performance. And then, hey, how about shooting
67.1, Coach.
And what was it? Who was it? Wilbon that said they couldn't maintain that?
It was all of them. Yeah. It was
they all were idiots.
I don't know. He needs help when he's making a statement like that we can't maintain it. I've never seen a shooting performance like that ever. Have you?
It's the greatest shooting performance in NBA playoff history. Yeah, 76% for the first half, 67% for the game. Just incredible, really.
In the Garden now, right. In the Garden, right. In a hostile environment in the Garden. So it's just a great time, and I'm so excited about the next matchup with the Celtics. We know how good they are, but do not ever underestimate this Pacer team.
Lynn Dunn with us, Fever GM here on this Monday.
In case you didn't know, Lynn Dunn is with us.
You're bringing the energy and bringing the passion. I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, it's been a lot of celebrating as the Pacers move on. And tomorrow night there in Boston, 8 o'clock, our coverage on The Fan at 7:30. Well, Lynn, let's talk about your team. Most definitely not the start that you wanted, 0-3 on the season. Of course, hosting the Sun tonight. What has been the story of these three games early on this season?
Well, we've absolutely seen improvement with this young team from the first night to where we were over the weekend at New York in Barclays Center with the New York Liberty. We're seeing gradual improvement. And people sometimes lose track of the fact that we're probably the youngest or one of the youngest teams in the league, and we're still trying to, you know, learn our way, get in jail, get better. Excited about the TV games we're having. We're excited about the sold-out arenas that we're playing in. We're seeing the progress of Boston and Clark and Mitchell now learning to play together. It's unfortunate that Mitchell missed all of training camp with her ankle, so we just got to gel while we're playing.
Lynn Dunn is with us here, Fever GM. Moving on to Caitlin specifically, Coach, how would you evaluate what you've seen from her in these three games?
Well, I think she's the focus of all the opponents that we've played so far. Deny her the ball, hit her, bump her, shove her, trap her, you know, make life miserable for her. And I think we're seeing her adapt to what she's seeing, which is totally different from the college game. And I thought Sunday she really showed how adaptable she is, how smart she is. So we're seeing her grow as a young rookie. And I just think it's an exciting time for us. I'm real positive about the direction we're going. It's unfortunate we had to open the season against four of the best teams in the league, but that's the way it is. You can't worry about things you can't control.
Have the turnover numbers for her surprised you at all?
Not really. I think that's part the adapting to the athleticism, the length of the athletes that she's playing against now. In the WNBA that are significantly better than perhaps those she played against in the Big Ten.
Lynn Dunn with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You know, it seemed, Lynn, that at least that first game, it sure seemed like you know, teams have been dialed in. You mentioned to bump her, to deny her the ball, but it also feels like, you know, because of the attention she's has received, it feels like that has even went up. Does that make sense? Do you guys feel
that way? It looks that way, doesn't it?
It does.
It does look that way because she has received an enormous amount of attention. And let me tell you something. Her attention has brought the WNBA into the spotlight. It's raise the visibility of the entire league. Now everybody's wanting to watch a WNBA game. Everybody's wanting to get a ticket. So kudos to her for bringing the visibility from the college game to our game.
Lynn, have you or Christy felt the need to sit down with her after these first couple games and talk with her about the inconsistencies, the struggles, however you want to label it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Our job is to help and grow every one of our players, in particular the rookies. You know, last year we had the number one pick with Aaliyah Boston. She went through the adjustment period, but hey, she's a big, wide body, you know, that's a little bit different physically than Clark. But, you know, Clark's smart. She's tough. She's been in the spotlight all 4 years at Iowa. I'm amazed with her. Her toughness, I guess you could say, for someone so young.
How has, I know this just started, Lynn Dunn with us here, by the way, chartering flights, how have you noticed? I'm sure that's been well received within the organization.
Well, we're surprised. You know, we had no idea that all of a sudden they were going to institute a charter program. We were one of the first teams to get a chance to fly charter, and we did last week. And I think that was because we did have a connecting flight, and that was the teams that they looked at first. You know, coming back after the game, getting home, getting to sleep in your own bed, that's a wonderful experience instead of spending the whole next day traveling. So we think it's overall it's a wonderful addition to the league. We're thrilled that the league office and Kathy Engelbert and whoever's in charge decided to do that right now.
All right, we'll end with this. Again, tonight, Lynn Dunn, of course, with us here, the Fever GM. Tonight it'll be the Fever and the Sun at Gainbridge Fieldhouse at 7 o'clock before they head off west for their first road trip, or big road trip, I should say, of the year. Just overall expectations for tonight. Obviously saw the Sun earlier this season. What are you looking to see tonight as you guys try to get your first win of the year?
Right, rematch with the Sun. You know, we went up there on opening night. They're very good. They're one of the top three or four teams in the league. They're definitely a championship caliber team. We know what to expect. Alyssa Thomas and Dawana Bonner, two of the best players in the league. One of them is an Olympian. So we're looking forward to a rematch with them and a challenge to take them on in our facility with our fans.
Lynn Dunn, I just got off a plane from Las Vegas about 18 hours ago. You've got Vegas energy. I love that.
I better have Vegas energy if I'm going to do this job.
Well, safe travels. I know Vegas is on the road trip for you. Safe travels. And as always, we love the time with you. So thank you very much.
Hey, guys, thanks so much. And go Pacers.